Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Well, we had high hopes, but to no avail. Trump's so-called diplomacy pitches are in a state of collapse. He is unwilling to end the conflict in Ukraine, and military action against Iran almost seems inevitable. Meanwhile, we're witnessing the collapse of liberal democracy in Germany. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Slobodin. He is an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here in Moscow. As I said in my introduction, Mark, I mean, this diplomacy pitches that Trump has put forward in this first 100 days seem to have sputtered out, losing a lot of momentum. We have this minerals deal, I think, that's open to interpretation what that means for the Ukraine conflict. But we've heard over the last few weeks that he still may walk away, whatever that means. And of course, with Iran, the latest rounds of talks have been postponed. We'll see if they've been canceled. So where do we stand on the diplomacy front?
Yeah, in regards to what the Trump administration refers to as quote unquote diplomacy, because I think we need to redefine diplomacy for what the Trump administration has been conducting. They don't use teams of experts, of officials. They've got Trump's personal envoy, whom is a New York real estate developer, Steve Witkoff, who flies around to Ukraine, right, to Russia, to Oman to speak with Iran, to deal with Netanyahu in Israel. And he doesn't evidently even have team of people, right, of experts on particular regions and areas that he goes with. A couple of weeks ago, he couldn't even name the four regions of Ukraine that Russia claims are now part of Russia, right? Donetsk, Lugansk, Kherson, and Zaporozhye. He couldn't even name them. And he's the principal American negotiator. On top of that, we have Trump's mafia-style tactics, where he comes in with bluff and bluster and threatens military or economic apocalypse, and then walks it all back in the preceding days. I think this is a infantile. I mean, he is the definition of enfant terrible, the terrible infant, when it comes to negotiations. And negotiations are protracted affairs conducted between two states at a professional level, not deals, art of the deal with a handshake in a back room. This administration has neither the expertise, the competence, or the patience to deal with diplomatic work. They have the equivalent of attention deficit disorder driven by the 24-hour news cycle. They are unable to stay focused on anything long enough for any actual diplomacy to take place.
George, your thoughts? I mean, Mark gave a pretty good illustration of what's going on here. I mean, I think what compounds the frustration that all of us feel is that, as I said in my introduction, we wanted to have hope. I mean, we wanted to break this logjam, okay? I mean, Biden, as we all are aware, he made sure getting out of the conflict in Ukraine would be very, very hard. Well, that's been proven correct. Even more disappointing is that it seemed, at least initially, the Iranians, they made it very clear that they're open to negotiations. And again, George, I mean, who do we listen to? Witkoff, Marco Rubio, the ex-National Security Advisor, soon to become United Nations Ambassador. Who? I mean, it's just all over the place. It's hard to calibrate what's going on. George.
You're absolutely right, Peter. And you raised the absolutely important, crucial question, which is Biden left a horrific mess for his successor. So therefore, it was always going to be very, very difficult for Trump to get America out of this situation. And again, this takes a long time. I mean, if we go back to the Nixon years, it took 4 years for the United States to end its involvement in Vietnam. It was a long, long process. And a lot of people said at the time, well, why didn't Nixon just simply walk away? You just have to pack the bags and go away. Well, it never happens like that. It is always going to be a very difficult, protracted process. So what Trump has done, I mean, he's at the moment, he's sort of juggled different things. He's tried the ceasefire route. That didn't gel. And he tried the various ceasefires on infrastructure. And now he's got this minerals deal, but the minerals deal is a far cry from anything that he had spoken about before, that we're gonna get paid back $350 billion for all that we've invested. That isn't going to happen. But then the other day, he gave an indication that he's moving in the right direction when he said, well, look, I've already accomplished a great deal in Ukraine. I prevented Putin from taking the whole of Ukraine. So that gives him at least a route towards proclaiming that, well, we've done something, you know. I'm just saying that isn't going to be the final deal. You're absolutely right. Whom do we listen to? Where are we going? But that's what a peace process is about. It's long, it's difficult, it's protracted, it goes backwards and forwards, but I wouldn't necessarily immediately dismiss it.
Well, and on top of it, George, Richard Nixon never said, I'm going to do it in a day, I'm going to do it in the first 100 days. There was never a timeline. And this is part of the problem we have with living in the media world that we do. Everyone's anticipating the next benchmark. You know, Mark, one of the interesting things that I kind of like what George had to say there, because this whole conflict, the way it's been delivered to the public, it's basically been one series of narratives after another. Russia's defeated. It's already collapsed. You know, Putin's on the run. You know, all this stuff we've heard over the last 3 years. But Trump, I think, maybe kind of tripped upon it by accident. Well, after all, Ukraine is still a sovereign nation. I don't know if he can, if they have the finesse to be able to do that, because this entire conflict has been run on memes. Mark.
I'm a little actually tired of people, of the Trump administration's, oh, this was Biden's mess. This is Biden's problem. And Trump is trying to clean up. First of all, when it comes to Iran, that's entirely Trump's mess. It was Trump that ripped up the JCPOA. It was Trump that assassinated Qasem Soleimani in a third country. It is Trump that is waging war on Yemen with bombing over 1,000 sites and causing hundreds of civilian casualties. It was Trump who brags about first sending javelins to Ukraine, which he claims prevented Russia from seizing Kiev, which was never what they were doing in the beginning of the conflict in the first place. Trump certainly did nothing to force the Kiev regime to the Minsk Accords, which they were signed up at the time during his first 4 years in office. And now this is Trump's war. This is no longer
absolutely
Biden's war. Trump is now selling weapons to the Kiev regime in Ukraine. In the last week, there have been two weapon packages sold to Ukraine. And now, instead of a gift from the United States, it's being paid for by the Europeans, essentially. Ukraine is paying for it, but of course, all of their money comes from either the EU or the United States. First, a $50 million package, and then a $300 million package to support and provide parts for the FTS-16s. This is Trump's wars now. We can just call Trump Brandon Jr. because he is adopting Biden's foreign policy of doubling down on military and sanctions escalation against Russia. And this new sanctions package threatening anyone who buys any Iranian oil of not doing any business with the United States, that is also another attack on China, because China is the primary buyer of Iran's oil at this point. So it has become essentially Trump's war against the BRICS at this point. And thus far, the BRICS are standing in solidarity.
It really isn't. Oh, so you're going to ask a question.
Go ahead. You react.
No, I disagree. I don't think it's Trump's war. Trump's role in Ukraine was minimal. Yes, he sold the javelins during his first term. He got impeached for it. the key players in Ukraine were Obama and the coup of 2014 that created the mess to begin with, and then Biden's massive escalation. Trump essentially inherited a mess created by Biden.
But George, hang on. But you know what Trump could have done, and this is the contradiction that he's dealing with. The United States is a co-belligerent and a mediator. Okay, he could just say, look, we're not taking sides anymore. We're not going to supply any more arms. No more intelligence. Okay, he has to step back because he hasn't been willing to step back. What Mark was referring to is direct commercial sales. Well, that's just a runaround of going for another arms deal through Congress. So it is his war.
It's a commercial sale. It's much more limited than anything that Biden did.
Limited.
It may go much beyond that. I don't dispute that it may go beyond that, but it's much more limited. It's a limited commercial sale. And again, I mean, that doesn't vitiate the idea that he is still trying to end the war. He's still continuing. You know, when you end a war, you don't just simply, oh, well, that's it. As of midnight tonight, we're out of here. Nobody does that. It's always a process. And he has completely changed the whole perspective of Biden. I mean, the Biden people, you were using this war, a proxy war against Russia, in order to degrade, defeat, humiliate, and destroy Russia. Trump doesn't do that. Trump's point is, look, we need to get out of this war. This has nothing to do with any American interest. However, he has inherited something, and it's very difficult to get yourself out of something.
Okay, but if you inherit something, it is yours. Mark, before we go to the break, go ahead.
Yeah, Trump made clear his purpose here is to save Ukraine, i.e. save the U.S. proxy regime in Kiev. That's exactly what he said. And whatever the intentions were, whether U.S. weapons, you know, are a commercial deal or a gift from Biden when they kill Russian troops, it doesn't make a fig's difference to Russia.
All right, gentlemen, here I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, George, let's change gears here. The ADF in Germany is being deemed by the German intelligence community as a terrorist. What's the correct term?
Extremist
organization. All right, let's get our viewers up to speed here. In the last election, they came in second place. Unprecedented for an alternative party in German history, post-war history. And let me think, George, the last public opinion poll has them dead even with the Christian Democrats. In one poll even has them ahead. And now it looks like the German government, through its intelligence community, wants to shut down a very, very popular party, the most popular party in the eastern part of the country. Marco Rubio is not a person I tend to quote, but Germany has just given its spy agency new powers to surveil the opposition. That's not democracy. That's tyranny in disguise. I hate to quote Marco Rubio, but I just did. George.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Marco Rubio made the absolutely appropriate comment there. And then the German foreign ministry responded to that statement of Rubio's, saying, well, we from our history know that right-wing extremist parties need to be stopped. So they've made clear that the goal here is that they're going to stop this party, the party that, according to polls, is at least the equal of the Christian Democrats and maybe even ahead. And this new government, this new Christian Democrat government, is already sinking in the polls. So it's not anything that can be arrested, that they're sinking it, or they're very, very unpopular. So this is now the leading opposition party, and the German government is declaring that it's going to make a move to outlaw it. And this is really part of a movement throughout Europe. I mean, we have it in France. Marine Le Pen has been essentially told that she can't run for president in 2027, then, you know, we had Romania with Georgescu. Basically, they canceled the election. And now they've got, and there's an election today in Romania, likely that it's going to be some Georgescu light who will prevail there. That's already causing anxieties throughout Brussels. So you can see in Europe, there are these populist movements. And the political establishment is using the most coercive means of bringing them to heel. And I think democracy is in real danger in Europe now.
Mark, it's the reason that the AFD is being deemed as an organization to worry about is because, as we've already made reference to, there in German history, this is obviously going back to the 1930s. But the problem is it ends up being a paradox, because the more they push this, the more it looks like January 1933, because they're squashing political opposition. So, I mean, no matter what is done, they seem to be repeating their history, which doesn't bode well for Germany, and it certainly doesn't bode well for Europe. Mark?
I think the German intelligence agency is correct. There is a real and substantial threat to democracy and Germany and across Europe broadly right now. And that threat, of course, is not some third party AFD or the National Rally Party in France or Georgescu in Romania. The threat is the totalitarian and authoritarian center left, center right, hegemonic extremist center. They are the real and current and substantial threat to democracy. It is not a coincidence that after how many decades of operation the Alternative for Germany is now being labeled extremist when they suddenly become the most popular party in the country. The ruling elite, right, in Berlin, in Brussels, feels threatened. And they, over the last few years of exercising the curtailment of civil and political rights with a scaremongering about their proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, they feel entitled and empowered to pursue these authoritarian measures to head off any political and ideological opposition within their own countries, even when it clearly represents now the plurality of the voting citizens. It's long been a subject of academic political science literature to talk about a democracy deficit in the EU, in Europe, but never to the extent that we're seeing right now. Yeah, they are the threat.
And George, what we're seeing as a trend in the so-called liberal democracies is that everything's an emergency. Everything is an emergency. That's the excuse to shut down civil liberties, to shut down individual politicians, to try to marginalize and get rid of political parties. It's on emergency. It's COVID. It's Russia. It's a disrespect for
securitization.
George.
Yes, that's right. Now, the United States has always blazed the trail here, because it was the United States that started this movement of taking people off the ballot. And this was they did that with Trump through a number of ways. And that would have worked had the Supreme Court not stepped in and said, you can't really do that. But that really started. And of course, then the Europeans just seized on it with enthusiasm. Yeah, let's do this. And then we had this Thierry Breton, that former European commissioner, a real authoritarian. I mean, this is a person who sees the role of the European Commission as precisely to crack down on all forms of speech the European Commission doesn't like. He said, we're going to do to the AFD what we did to Georgescu in Romania. And remember when Ursula von der Leyen said that we must go beyond debunking, if we must go towards pre-bunking. In other words, pre-bunking, we got to crack down on speech before it happens. So she gets really into this authoritarian mindset. And so and then we see this. We saw in Moldova an EU candidate member. You have there, you know, the governor of Galgazia under arrest. The other day in Romania, we had a journalist, an RT journalist, who was just simply kicked out of the country for no reason at all. So you've got these emergencies. You've got the emergency of Russia, which is apparently always growing ever more powerful and subverting and terrorizing and whatever. And then, of course, we can have these right-wing extremists. One way or another, they're going to outlaw all of the political parties that challenge this, as Marx said, the center-left, center-right hegemony.
Yeah, they're the greatest threat to democracy in the Western world, the centrists. Okay, with the remaining time that we have, we've already passed the 100-day mark, and that's a tradition in American politics, the first 100 days. So I'm going to ask both of you, first Mark, grade Trump, 100 days.
D. I don't give him an F because the U.S. is no longer firing ballistic missiles into Russia. Other than that, everything they've done from Trump's tariff war on the world to their bluff and bluster against Iran, threatening war to clean up a mess that Trump made from his first administration to the war on Yemen, to greenlighting genocide in Israel, to a complete bumbling mashup of any attempt to improve relations with Russia over the conflict in Ukraine. And now the Trump administration itself, already divided, now appears to be falling apart. Waltz is out or exiled to something that Trump considers completely purposeless, the UN, and Hegseth looks set to follow. I think the Trump administration is already, you know, this clown show is already having serious issues.
Okay, and what's your grade, George?
I'd say it's a B. I think it has an ambitious agenda, very ambitious domestic agenda, tackling all sorts of issues that previous administrations had mooted, but never had the guts or the strength to do. I mean, he's taking on the universities, the law firms. These are the most powerful institutions in contemporary American life. And they incidentally fuel the foreign policy that they of United States, the humanitarian interventions, the interventions in other countries through their think tanks, through their foundations, through their civil society groups, through their international criminal courts. All of that, it's a kind of a vast infrastructure created by the universities and the law firms, all very good. He's dismantling the National Endowment for Democracy, the Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, USAID. I didn't think that would happen, but Trump is doing it. And when it comes to the foreign policy, I think the jury is out. The Iran thing is still up in the air. There's still very serious negotiations taking place. There's an article the other day in the Times of Israel going into very details of the negotiations, and there may yet be a deal. Mike Waltz is out. That may be a good news. It's clear that
apparently
bombing Iran was the key that got him out. That Trump didn't want to go down the path that Waltz wanted, which was to bomb Iran. So he's the one who's been sidelined, and therefore that's a possibility. I'm not saying that that's a done deal, but it's at least a good sign that Waltz has been sidelined.
But there's a lot of others just like him, unfortunately. You know, Mark, it's often said, but I don't think it's been said during the first 100 days of the Trump second administration. But the saying is, it doesn't matter who you vote for, you get John McCain. Does that apply in your opinion?
Yeah, I don't think you can really claim that Trump is dismantling warmongering institutions when he invites the warmongers into his own administration. And then you consider it a good sign when he gets rid of one of them. I think that's a kind of a joke. No matter what Trump, you know, personally may have thought 15 minutes ago, he seems to have a very, shall we say, mercurial personality and focus on the issues. He's surrounded by a majority of neocons and warmongers. And, you know, whether we're talking his chief of staff, you know, it depends on who he replaces Mike Waltz with. There is an in a momentum and an impetus to U.S. hegemony. And, you know, whether Trump, I don't think he really meant to dismantle them. And I don't think he's dismantling these institutions now. He's simply reformatting them with people he sees as politically loyal to himself.
He's dismantling them. What do you want?
All right, gentlemen, we're not going to resolve.
He's dismantling them.
We'll probably discuss this next week, gentlemen. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.